committee order. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Sinapa.
Absent.
Commissioner Geary.
Here.
Commissioner Blackburn.
Here.
Commissioner Taggart.
Here.
Commissioner Christopher is absent. And Supervisor Couch is also absent.
Okay, thank you. First item on the agenda is the approval and summary proceedings from August.
I'll make approval to accept it.
You look good to me. You look very, very thorough. So we have a motion. We have a second.
I will make a second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No, thank you. Motion carried. Consent agenda, there is nothing this month. Oh, by the way, everybody, please, all 50 of you in the room, if you could please turn your phones to mute or off. That'd be great. Okay. Public presentation, item number D. This portion of the meetings is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter not on the agenda, but under the jurisdiction of the commission. Commissioners may respond briefly to statements made or questions posed. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, or request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. Speakers are limited to 2 minutes. And first row, any comments? And Sunday, you're in the second row. Good afternoon. It's good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while. You didn't make it the last 2 meetings.
Yeah, I did last 2 meetings.
Oh, did you? Okay. No comments? You have no comments? Okay. Table 3, please. Nothing? And Danny?
Nothing.
And in the last row, nothing? Okay. We'll bring it back then. Staff announcements or reports? Director's monthly report, please.
Good evening, everybody. Nick Collin, Director of Kern County Animal Services. just touch on a few items in the director's report. We had a busy month, that's to say the least. And I'll touch on it, like I said, in the director's report, but we spent 2 weeks caring for pets displaced as a result of the French fire. And then right after we got back from caring for those animals that were displaced from the French fire, we had what the county defines as an outbreak of COVID in the animal shelter among staff. And what that means is I think it was 3 employees who tested positive within a 14-day period, which meant that it triggered a requirement for us to send all unvaccinated staff home, those that were exposed. And so what we ended up having was about 50% of our workforce in the shelter and another probably 10 or 15% of our workforce in field services was at home for 2 weeks. It was challenging to just to keep our heads above water, just to offer services and take pets from the public and respond to calls. I mean, there was days when we had, two animal control officers for the entire county of Kern.
Wow.
We had employees who worked 21 straight days, and that was in addition to the French fire. So we've had a rough month, and people are just now coming back to work, and we're fortunate that we put out a plea for volunteers, and we got some volunteers, and we worked with the county administrative office to get us some emergency hiring authority just to bring on some extra health employees. And they started coming through earlier this week and starting to get back up to normal, but there's a lot of burned out people at the shelter, and it's like I said, it's been a rough month, but we shall persevere. Just to get into the highlights of August. Our foster program, it's a busy time of year for foster. We saw a total of 170 animals enter the foster care program in the month of August, 56 dogs, 35 puppies, one cat, 77 kittens, and a rabbit. There was two others, and I don't know what those were.
I think a horse and a sheep or a goat, I think. Yeah.
There you go.
What was it?
A horse and a sheep or a goat.
Oh, good.
330 cats were spayed, neutered, and released in August. A total of 13,891 cats so far since 2013. We did place 327 total animals through adoption in the month of August. We also had an adoption promotion, which I'll touch on here in a second. Vaccination clinics, I don't know if anybody knows, we actually do still do a vaccine clinic. It's on a wait while basis, correct? Yeah, so it's a, sort of like a drive up appointment only kind of basis, but we still do vaccines. In the month of August, we administered 79 rabies vaccines, 95 parvo distemper, 75 licenses, and 14 cat vaccines. So we are still doing that. I think you can go to our website, mm-hmm. and there's a sign up for that in case you know somebody needs a vaccine. Year to date, 935 dogs, 150 puppies, 114 cats, 433 kittens total have been adopted. Rescue, thank God for rescues, 388 dogs, 317 of those puppies, 45 cats, and 135 kittens. Field services was not as busy as it could have been simply because we didn't have enough officers to respond to the volume of calls that were coming in, but we ran 1,007 calls, 21 dogs returned to owners in the field in August, 47 dogs secured on property by animal control officers. As I touched on earlier, we did have an adoption promotion August 21st. It was purely based on an immediate need. Kennels were crowded, and when we were contemplating euthanasia of adoptable animals, sure to look at the potential for a promotion. And we were grateful that the community came out. I have on there that we placed 87 animals in those 2 days. The deputy director says it was higher than that.
That's good.
I got her permission just to go with 87. But it really did help us. Don't mean to sound like Debbie Downer because we were full again within a week or so, but it was good to see all those animals leaving. A lot of them were long-term residents. As I touched on earlier also, we did respond to the French fire to help evacuees care for their animals. We first responded August 20th in partnership with the Central California Animal Disaster Team. Care was provided 7 days a week to approximately 45 animals over the course of 2 weeks to help evacuated residents stay safe with their pets. So just to recap on how that works. Whenever there's an evacuation, there's an evacuation warning and an evacuation order. When there's an evacuation order, that means you need to move, like now. But the state of California doesn't have the authority to make you leave your house. So the closest they can get to that is to tell you that there's an evacuation order. So there was some warnings and some orders in the area. First few days, thank God for Debbie and her team. I'm not going to say CCAT, I'm going to say Debbie, because Debbie was literally there caring for those animals. But we had a handful of, I think, 7 dogs and like 5 cats or something like that for the first couple of days. And there's a picture in your director's report. It's on the last page. On the left, you'll see a billow of smoke. I included that picture because I can't recall what day it was. It was either that Monday or Tuesday, like around the 23rd or 24th.
Isn't that the day they were talking about closing the shelter?
It may have been, but I went to the gas station to go fill up the gas can so I could fill up the emergency trailer with fuel. And I saw these giant billows of smoke that were coming out from the Wolford Heights area, and it wasn't anything like I had seen up until that point. And I thought, well, that's not good news, and it was probably just a matter of minutes after I took that photo that I got a phone call from the EOC saying that the fire jumped the line and that Wolford Heights was in immediate danger of going ablaze and to expect an influx of people. And sure enough, by the time I got back, it was probably 6 o'clock at night by this time. There was about 20 or 25 people that just showed up because their houses were burning and they had their animals. And you know, thank God for some of the Red Cross residents there, because they came forward and they were like, "What do we? How can we help?" You know. So from that point forward, it was, you know, about, like I said, 45 animals that we were caring for you know, the next 7 to 10 days. And it's always an interesting experience, but we're just incredibly grateful for the Sea Cat. You know, we literally wouldn't have been able to care for those pets if it wasn't for the Central California Animal Disaster Team. And I know there's only like 8 people in here, man, but if you're looking for an organization to volunteer your time with, I can't think of a better one than the Central California Animal Disaster Team. Like, they literally were saving people's animals by caring for them.
Thank you. But you pretty much lived there, so Nick was there a lot.
Anywho, both the animal services, large and small evacuation trailers, were deployed, in addition to using a portion of the cache of emergency response supplies that had been located in the Kern River Valley. That was an awesome, actually came up here and talked about that probably 2 years ago. We had a grant that we received from the California Veterinary Medical Association, thanks to Central California Animal Disaster Team putting in a good word for us. And they donated 2 sea trains full of disaster supplies. We were smart enough to stash one of them in the Kern River Valley Animal Shelter. And sure enough, that night, on that night that I took that picture, I was driving out to that sea train taking crates out of it. And we hadn't had to crack it until that moment. So thank goodness that we did receive that grant and those supplies. It's unfortunate that we live in a time and place when it's definitely going to happen. But it's definitely going to happen. And it'll happen again. Officers responded to calls daily in the area in units. So they were working 2x2. Well, there's only 2 at a time because we didn't have enough officers. But they were providing shelter-in-place care, so animals that could not leave their homes, or the animal owners had already left their homes and had to leave their pets behind. Officers were delivering food and water every day. Delivering supplies, they were evacuating some animals to safety as they could. There's some pictures in there. One of them might have one of the animal services commissioners on.
Oh,
yeah,
looking pretty.
Not. But we actually operated 2 animal shelters. Towards the end, there was the one in the Kern River Valley. We actually had one in Delano, too. So it stretched us thin, but it's always an interesting experience when disaster strikes, and just to help people that are at their worst point is always somewhat rewarding. Statistics, I can answer any questions about statistics or the director's report.
Okay, we'll start up here.
I'm good.
Okay, do you have any questions? I have no questions at all. I did want to say I was very pleased with the outcomes and everything. I know we're talking about more than just the shelter animals, and we're sympathetic to the animals everywhere in our county, but we're right up there at 90%, almost close to 90% again on the save rate, so that's excellent. That's my observation. Any questions from the first table or row? Second row, nothing. Third row, Stacy. Okay. So, I guess that's it. We'll move on to. Oh, I need to receive and file this report, by the way. So I need a motion.
I'll make a motion to receive and file. Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passed. Thank you very much. Commissioners' announcements and or reports. Jenny, anything that you want to, like your group, or anything you want to talk about?
He did.
Okay. He pretty much covered it, I think.
They did a good job considering the stuff that you did.
Is that part completely out at this point? I was trying to do a little research. Is it out at this point?
I don't believe it was 100% contained, but it's...
Not quite? Okay.
Yeah, it was 79% the last check.
79,
okay.
They haven't done the debrief yet, as far as I know.
Yes, they did.
Oh, we missed it.
I couldn't make it. I knew about it.
Okay.
Naomi's already. Well, I wanted to attend, but they didn't have a virtual option.
Oh.
You had to physically go there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't down with that.
Then I'll get
back in. Okay. I have nothing either on commissioner announcements. It's been a crazy month. I mean, besides being hot and everything, it's just been, everything's been 10 times harder to do anything about because of the world we live in, but I have nothing. to report on a, by Commissioner Happ. So we'll move on then to old business, and it says none under staff referrals. I'm not sure what that.
We don't have any.
So we don't have anything. Except, okay, on item two, update for the AKC Reunite fundraising efforts. Now, Janice couldn't be here today, and Joan couldn't be here today. She's got an issue going on. She did text me. I guess I could read it, maybe.
I can give an update on that.
I'm sorry?
I can give an update on that.
Okay, why don't you? That would be good.
As far as I know, so I spoke with counsel. This came up recently. We were contacted by a local, not local, a national chain of pharmacy providers. And they wanted to work with us to develop a fundraiser so that, you know, a portion of their medicine that they gave out in their pharmacy, would a portion of the proceeds that were received from them went to animal services. And we went to council, and council said, no, can't do that. The explanation that I received is probably a bit long to go into right now, but so knowing that they had said that about this one national chain, I brought up the opportunity for the AKC Reunite fundraising, and the answer I got was the same, that the county should not participate in promoting one business or one organization over another. So they recommended that we reach out to the Friends Foundation. So I got a hold of Janice. She's been busy. She just got back to me on Monday, and I connected her with Cecilia with the Friends Foundation, so that whatever fundraising they need to do to get us those trailers, the Friends Foundation will be participating in that. So, and I told them I'm at their disposal if they need some help, a press release or some sort of media that I can do just to say, hey, this is really going to help us. Good time for it too, right after the French fire. So, and I know that Janice and Cecilia will work together to craft a good plan to start developing that. Some fun.
Yeah, she was going to try and make the meeting, but she was out delivering dogs somewhere, I think she said, so she couldn't be here. But thanks for the update. Status on ordinance subcommittee revisions. Anything new on that?
Yes. There's a packet in front of you.
Okay,
so this is going to take a bit of an explanation. And let me preface this by saying that the way I see my role in these revisions and my role as it was on the subcommittee, I was not a voting member on the subcommittee. However, if there was an absence, I stood in as a voting member. It didn't happen that often. But I was there for every meeting. I sort of tried to play mediator when the need arose, and I took notes and document the things that happened. But I feel like my role is to take what the subcommittee wanted to do and present that to the commission to make some decision about what to do with it from there. Now, I realized a fatal flaw in this subcommittee early on was that we should have included and involved council. They should have been there. Because what ended up happening is we just kind of put together what we wanted. And it turns out we can't do everything that we wanted. Or we can, but the language that we used was not legal. We couldn't do it. It was in direct conflict with some of the state's definitions and things like that. So that was our fatal flaw. I think we should have had counsel in on it in the beginning. Not that Jerry was jumping at the opportunity to participate in it, but we spent the better part of 14 months, and probably would have saved us some time if we would have had counsel there. So that being said, also. In December of 2017, every year, I haven't done it recently, but in December of 2017, I put together just a meeting of our senior staff, shelter people, administrative people, and field personnel to talk about goals. and things we wanted to accomplish in the coming year, big picture things. In that first page that you on this PowerPoint, where it says 12, 14, 17, those are my meeting notes from that meeting, December 14th of 2017. And the reason why I put that there is just to let everybody know that I think that a part of this subcommittee's recommendations needs to include things that the department feels are important to get done. And that was part of the discussion. A lot of times there was questions about directions to take, and the questions came to me about what was realistic. And I think that was a good part of it. So I just, in 2017, we had felt, our senior staff and our field services personnel, they had felt pretty strongly that it should be a department goal to have some sort of enforcement for spay and neuter on those animals that our officers knew were contributing to the problem. So what we meant by that, it was just a thought, you know, just we put it on paper that we had our opinion on the problems that we were seeing in the field, and we had our own opinion about a solution to them, and we thought, well, we don't necessarily feel that it's fair to tell everybody they have to go and spay and neuter their pets, because not everybody's part of the problem. But we certainly knew, as an officer, who was the problem, and it was the dogs that are not being maintained on property. It was the dogs that are being allowed to roam loose at night, and property that's unsecure, and that they're meeting a male or a female before you know it, there's a litter of puppies. So we always wanted to say, okay, well, whatever ordinances we were to create, we would want it to give us some teeth to be able to approach the problem to have them spay and neuter their pet. We all know spay and neuter is the solution, so it's education, and we want to target the people that are going to provide the biggest results. So that was in 2017. We kind of were starting to think that we wanted to try to attack the root problem. In early 2018, around February or March, quite a few community members started attending these meetings. They began to express their preference for ordinances that would require the spay and neuter of all dogs in unincorporated areas of Kern County. This led to several months of discussion during Animal Services Commission meetings on the subject. That's mandatory spay and neuter. That's what we're talking about. I just want to remind everybody that the subcommittee was made to discuss mandatory spay and neuter. It was not made to discuss breeder's permits. It was made to discuss mandatory spay and neuter. That was the conversation that happened. It was a conversation that led to that subcommittee. It was decided in June of 2018 to form a subcommittee comprised of 5 community members, 2 commission members, with the intent of reviewing current Title VII ordinances and bringing forward to the Animal Services Commission recommended revisions. That is still my goal. I'm going to present something to y'all, yes, I said y'all, and you all can make a decision what to do with it from there. But the first meeting of the subcommittee occurred on September 19th, 2018, with the exception of one subcommittee member who was unable to attend. The stated goals of each member were, I thought it was important to document this, and I didn't put any names on it, but the first member wanted to address that current ordinances do not give officers enough bite, wanted to see licensing compliance increase, wanted to spell out what rescues can and cannot do, wanted to include tubal ligation in the alter definition. The second subcommittee member wanted to find the cracks in the current ordinances and address them in the best way. The third subcommittee member wanted to clamp down on irresponsible breeding, wanted local laws to match the state laws, stated that they were not an advocate for mandatory spay and neuter, and wanted to address tethering laws in the county. A fourth subcommittee member wanted to maintain that everyone has the right to own animals, wanted wording on the commercial animal facility permit made more clear. Another subcommittee member wanted to become more familiar with current ordinances and wanted to see clearly enforceable laws developed. One of the last subcommittee members just simply wanted less confusion in the current ordinances. That was day one of kind of what everybody stated that they wanted to see come out of it. In January of 2019, we actually had come to, I know I'm leaping ahead here, but we had made a decision early on, and I can say we, but it's really me. We made the decision to delay the more contentious topic, which was breeding, with breeder's permits. we wanted to delay that until the last so that we can get the easy things, low-hanging fruit out of the way. And a lot of these things, there's a document that's teeny tiny that you probably need a magnifying glass to read. But that's the notes that I took from that day. We took a consensus vote on a lot of the stuff that was not breeding related. So it was like the definition of dog, definition of trolley, dog training definition, breeding, breeding defined, or the definition of a breeder, the commercial animal. We I know. We looked at some parts of the commercial animal facility permit simply because at the time we were going to remove any reference to breeding in the commercial animal facility permit because the subcommittee wanted a specific breeder's permit. So we didn't need it in a commercial facility also, so we pulled that out. That was all ayes. Everybody agreed on that. We had an ordinance in there, a proposed ordinance about spaying and neutering of unaltered dogs, which basically said if you're in violation, if you're found in violation of any other Title VII ordinance or state law that, like your dog running loose, that you'd be required to spay and neuter your pet. That was not all ayes. That was 5 people for, 2 people against. And then we looked at some other animal care ordinances, 7.0 and 8.110. No, but you don't need to really know what these were, but I wanted to show that the easy stuff, almost everybody agreed to. There was only one thing, a few things that we didn't vote on, and they all had to do with breeding, and we just delayed it towards the end. We eventually, after quite a bit of debate and proposals and rebuttals, we came up with a language that was in the form of the ordinance that were presented to council. That the language in that breeder's permit was agreed to, but it was by a consensus. It was 4 votes to 3, December 18th, 2019. It was also the last day we met. So after we agreed on that breeder's permit language, that was the last thing that we had to really agree or accomplish. And at that point, 2020 happened. You know, I think I met with council once between January and when all heck broke loose in March. And it was really just to start off the discussion because council didn't really know where we were with it, didn't know the things that were being brought forward. So it was just one meeting, and then we had made the decision, okay, well, we'll continue to meet and hammer this out. But, you know, March 17th, we all went home. Again, I'm going to jump ahead a lot. July of 2021. That's the first time that council and I resumed discussions again about it. It's not the first time I tried to have discussions about it, but that's when everybody's schedule met up. And it quickly produced... Well, the first conversation we had was... let's not try to complete the whole thing. Let's try to take a bite at a time. And we just kind of figured, well, the most complicated, complex, and contentious issue is the breeding permit. So we said, well, let's address that first. Let's look at that first, just council and I. And she said she'll take it into consideration. And then the first meeting that we had about her findings, based on what she saw from the ordinances that we presented to her, actually was in August, and I think it was a Zoom meeting, and I was actually at the evacuation center when we had the meeting, caring for French fire dogs. But the problem that we began to see, or that council began to see, and this is on the next page, it had a lot to do, and I kind of touched on this at the last meeting, but it had a lot to do with the type of county that we are. There's a general law county versus a charter county. Kern County is a general law county. General law, in general, charter counties have a limited degree of home rule authority. They have some degree of their own ability to create and craft conflicting ordinances with the state, and that theirs would supersede. General law counties don't have that option. General law counties, majority of Crown counties in California are general law counties. There's 44 of them, there's 14 charter. So that just puts us in a position where anything that we draft, if there's an existing definition or ordinance or even something relatively close that exists in the state, it's conflict and ours wouldn't apply. So whatever we drafted would have to either be at that level, whatever ordinance it was, whatever definition it was, or it wouldn't be constitutional under the state constitution. So, and because the one thing that council had pointed out, which is California Health and Safety Code 122045, I think somebody had emailed me and asked if that was the, I can't remember the name of it, there was a breeding act, Dog Breeders Act.
Lockyer-Polanco.
There you go, Lockyer-Polanco. And that's where this comes from, the 122045. And that Health and Safety Code defines what a breeder is. And the state calls it, which I highlighted here, a person, firm, partnership, corporation, or other association that has sold, transferred, or given away all or part of three or more litters or 20 or more dogs during the preceding 12 months. That's problem number one, and I'll get to why it's a problem here in a second. The second problem we came across is that in order to require, another thing we wanted is the subcommittee wanted the ability to spay and neuter an animal on potentially first impound and potentially second impound. The state allows or requires spay and neuter for a dog that enters a shelter on third impound. The problem that council said is that if you're going to create a draft language in an ordinance that allows you to do that on first and second, it's a stretch because the state only allows it on a third. So it's contradicting. Because the state is already saying you can fix a dog on a third impound. The state's not saying you can do it on first and second. So for you to say that, it'd be a contradicting state. And then the third issue that came up is that the ordinances that we already have that your predecessors developed in 2008, which involves the commercial animal facility permit, also includes breeding, the term breeding. So what council discovered is that the current ordinance is in conflict with the state's definition of breeding. So now not only does that put a monkey wrench into most of the things that the subcommittee wanted to do, but it also says that, well, our current commercial animal facility permit could be challenged if somebody decided to. So then now we're in a position where council and I are trying to figure out, okay, well, we know what the subcommittee wants to do as a consensus. That's why I had at the previous meeting, I had reminded everybody of the things that the subcommittee wanted to get accomplished. And I'm going to, if I can read it, I'm going to have to squint. Real quickly, they were wanting to remove the breeding reference in the commercial animal facility definition. They were wanting to redefine the term dog. They were wanting to redefine the term trolley system and pulley system. They were wanting to define the term dog training. They were wanting to define animal breeder. They were wanting a breeder's permit that made you have to have a permit to have more than one dog or cat litter per year. They wanted to make sure that the requirement to have the commercial animal facility number posted in any advertisement covered any online stuff. They were wanting to make it mandatory to spay or neuter a dog if they're in violation of any state or local ordinance. They were wanting to make it so that people had to provide access to potable water at all times. They were wanting to make it so that when the temperature went above or below a certain number, that the owner needed to take action to bring the temperature up or down, bring the animal indoors. They were wanting to make it so that people that own roosters need to provide water, shelter, sufficient room, and clean premises. They were wanting to bring county code in line with state law for restraint periods for dogs. They were wanting to make it so that any unlicensed animal could be fixed prior to release. They were wanting it to be mandatory for an unlicensed animal to be fixed after second impound. They were wanting we make it so that the terms of an unwanted dog license state that you can't whelp more than one litter per year. So I go over all that just to refresh everybody's memory that that was basically everything that the subcommittee wanted done, encapsulated. Several of those things are complicated to make happen with the language that we gave because, again, the state defines breeder, among other things. So then we're council and I are left with, well, how can we still make what the subcommittee wanted happen and have the language allow us to do so? So we started looking at, this all happened really in the past 30 days, but we started looking at other counties, comparable counties in different ways. And we saw, we kind of latched on to Riverside. We have worked with Riverside on other projects that don't have anything to do with ordinances, but we were looking at Riverside's ordinances, and they had some what seemed to us common sense ordinances. It seemed to us that there were things that would accomplish everything that the subcommittee wanted, not only that, but would accomplish the things that we thought were important back in 2017. So what was all of the gobbledygook language that's in here, that is a work in progress. That is I wanted to bring something to show the 8 people that are in here the progress that's being made. This is not in any way, shape, or form to be presented to the commission. It's going to take us some time. But this is where we're thinking right now. So we thought that a 3-tiered approach to curbing both intentional and unintentional breeding would accomplish all of what the subcommittee was looking for. At its core, the approach involves ordinances that essentially make it illegal to maintain an unaltered and unlicensed dog in the incorporated areas of Kern County, with certain exceptions. If a pet owner is found to have an animal that is unaltered, they can abate a citation, unaltered and unlicensed. They can abate a citation by doing one of two things. Spay or neuter, this is very basic, it's a little more complex than this one. Spay or neuter the animal within a specified period of time, or purchase an unaltered dog license. The conditions for obtaining an unaltered dog license would include denial to anyone that is not in compliance with other Title VII requirements, or has received at least 3 complaints that are verified by us that the applicant has allowed a dog to run at large or has otherwise been found to be neglectful of animals, or the applicant has been previously cited for violating laws relating to the care and control of animals, or the animal is dangerous or potentially dangerous or vicious. So we're using some language here that would accomplish, again, both the things that the subcommittee wanted and the things that the department were hoping for. And then we would include in the terms of an unaltered dog license that the unaltered dog, when we say 3-tiered, so the first tier is an unaltered dog license. I purchase an unaltered dog license, I'm allowed up to 1 litter per year. Then there's some language for a limited breeder's permit. A limited breeder's permit would allow somebody up to 2 litters per year. And then there is a breeder's permit. That is 3 litters per year or more. The reason why that's in there is because that is in line with the definition that the state has put forth for breeding. So, like I said, and it is not all that different from what we have right now. I know it sounds like it is, but it's not. There is already language in the terms of an unaltered dog license that do not allow you to whelp more than 1 litter per year. So again, the limited breeder's permit would allow up to 2 litters per year to be produced. The breeder's permit would allow for 3 or more litters or 20 or more dogs per year. Again, that's what the Health and Safety Code 122045 already calls for. So, when you take a look at what the subcommittee wanted to do without getting into the things that don't address breeding, it's really tough to make an argument that what the language that's in here right now, it's tough to make an argument that would say that that's not going to accomplish that. I literally got this back from council yesterday at 5 p.m., but it's stuff that we had talked about before. It's things that we saw in other jurisdictions or comparable jurisdictions that we thought would work here. And again, it is my intent to craft this in such a way that it accomplishes what the subcommittee wanted, and then present it to you to decide what to do with it from there. Yeah.
I'm bringing my magnifying glass next month. Well, that's a lot. Any comments?
I would actually like to hear from the audience first. That'd be far from it.
Okay. We'll open up to the public first. Any comments on what Nick has said so far?
Yes.
Go ahead, Terry.
Hi, Terry Kahn to Hatchby. Okay. How is it that we have to go by California code 122045 for a breeder's permit, but we can still do a limited breeder's permit and not have to abide by California state law? I don't get how you can have both.
Yeah,
we're not calling them a breeder, we're calling them a limited breeder.
It's still
the same thing.
I'm going to take the easy way out and say that's a council question, and council's
and
not
council's
here.
Not here. Darn it.
I know. She emailed me about 2 p.m.
She did that deliberately.
But I saw that at 5 p.m. yesterday. And so I'm curious myself how that's justified.
Yeah, I'd love to hear how that gets finagled.
Yeah.
But
California state definition, and that's out of California Health and Safety Code. It's written in here several times, section 122045. It defines what a dog breeder is, a dog breeder or breeder. And there's a definition. 3 or more litters, 20 or more dogs. But then, and that's one thing that county council said, we have to abide by, so this idea of one litter and then you have to have a permit, can't do that. But then she goes and says, oh, but we can call it a limited breeder, and now we can do it?
I don't know
the answer. So that's the question. I'm also from county council as well. I wasn't aware that Ms. Bradley wasn't going to be here. My name is Christina Olson. I can look into this particular question and then get back to you guys and kind of find out where Ms. Bradley was coming from with regard to this question.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is through no fault of Ms. Bradley. She just sent it to me at 5 p.m. last night, and she emailed me this afternoon and said she wasn't going to be able to make it, so I didn't have even a chance to question her rationale behind that. I'm not an attorney, obviously.
Yeah, well, it's something that would require me to look into without, just looking at the code section.
Yeah, and in all fairness, I didn't get Jared's permission to clash with this all over the commission report, but I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew what we were working on.
Sunday Martinelli, Lakers Washington Boys Rescue. So does it seem to be the biggest holdup is this term, being a breeder? I mean, is it something that we can come up with maybe a different term or something to separate that? I mean, where, and we all know, it's not that it's the breeders that we're having a problem with, it's the irresponsible owners. Those are the ones that they just don't care. I mean, how do we, education is a big part of it, I get that, but then also getting out there and saying, okay, because they're looking at you when you see a breeders or whatever, they're like, well, I'm not breeding my dog, but she's just getting pregnant. I'm just passing puppies out like Christmas candy.
That was a huge discussion in the subcommittee.
Yeah.
Can we come up with a new title?
Is there a term that we can come up with that? And unfortunately, you have a lot of irresponsible breeders. I know of them. I need to actually talk to you about one of them. But that's just every different dog they can be, in a cage in their backyard. That, to me, that would be a backyard breeder.
Yeah, so just to answer your question, Sunny, this is just my own opinion. I have pondered the idea, well, if we can't have a breeder's permit, it's called a breeder's permit, what do we call it? A rearing permit? Like, what is it, just language? But whatever it's called, I think, let's not cut off our nose to spite our face, that what you're looking at here is language to address the root of the problem, which is the irresponsible pet owner. So whether it's called a breeder's permit, or a rearing permit, or a whelping permit, whatever you want to call it, this would essentially address the problem that you're bringing forward right now, which is the irresponsible owner, because essentially, it would give an animal control officer the ability to approach somebody who is an irresponsible pet owner, not a breeder, a pet owner, who, in my opinion, is the great contributor to the problem that we see, and be able to require them to either spay or neuter their pet or license their pet as an unaltered dog.
Have you discussed cost to those permits?
We haven't even gotten that far, honestly.
In regards, sorry, Daniel Literal, Oildale. In regards to the difference between like an unaltered dog license, a limited breeder's permit, and an actual breeder's permit, is it just different? Is the difference in the cost of the permit?
Well, I mean, the difference is in how many offspring you're allowed to have, but yes, there would be a cost difference, absolutely. But in order to obtain, again, this is, I've had less than 24 hours to look at this in council's form. Even if you had an unaltered or a limited breeder's permit, you would still be required to purchase an unaltered dog license. So, yes, the difference would be the cost between an unaltered dog license and then an unaltered dog license plus a limited breeder's permit and then potentially an unaltered dog license and a breeder's permit.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Chief?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Table 3, Stacy.
Michelle.
I'm Michelle, sorry.
933 Little One. I want to spring off of what Terry was saying. That is Terry up there, right?
Yes.
Okay. Like, learning about this new California breeder definition, I don't think that necessarily has to go hand in hand with having a permit to breed. That's just the definition of what California defines a breeder. That does not mean that you do not need a permit to breed any animals. And I think that it can be a completely separate thing. Yeah, a breeder is defined as someone who breeds three or more, but anyone who breeds one needs a permit. And I think that there is, in my non-knowledgeable mind, that there is a way, and that is why council put it in there, is because they are separate things.
And I get what Tara's saying, by the way, because I questioned it myself. Well, if I can't have a breeder's permit because it's defined state constitution, then why can I have a limited breeder's permit? Is it just the word limited that makes me allowed to do that? I have the same question. But I my personal opinion, whatever it's called, I want to address the root of the problem. And the root of the problem, in my opinion, is an irresponsible pet owner.
Okay.
And in regards to dealing with the irresponsible pet owner, perhaps in a way that is not directly tied to litters, is that the reason for the conditions for obtaining an unaltered dog license would include denial to anyone that falls into these certain categories? So what I'm saying is, by being able to deny breeding to an irresponsible pet owner based on the conditions listed here, would that accomplish the goal by, I don't know, almost like not focusing on the litters themselves, but the overall condition and situation of the animal? For example, an animal that you've got at least three complaints about, has been, found at large or whatever, dangerous, or the owner has been violating, laws. Is that, am I explaining my point?
Lost me.
I lost me like 30 seconds.
So let me try to answer and tell me if this is not the answer. That language, to me, that's why I included in the first slide of that PowerPoint my notes from 2017. It is my opinion. I'm not that far removed from working high intake areas. I was in the field in uniform on Friday. I want to address the irresponsible pet owner. And when I say irresponsible, I mean the guy or the girl or whoever that either has an unsecure property and lets your animal roam at night, or roam during the day, or doesn't make any effort to maintain the animal on property. Those are the contributors to 14,000 dogs and cats a year in my shelter.
Right.
If I walk onto your property and you have an unlicensed, unaltered dog, you have two options. There's a lot to be fleshed out here, but you would either have to comply with a citation, fix your pet, which is a whole other issue because there has to be resources for them to do that. Trust me, I played this out in my head. Or you purchase an unaltered dog license. However, if I cited you a month ago for your dog being off property, and in the past, depending on how long, I've had other reports of your dog running off property confirmed by animal services, you're not
eligible
for an unaltered dog license, and your only option to abate your citation is to fix your pet.
Yeah, so you did understand what I was getting at.
I think, but it creates other downstream issues that we will need to find solutions for. I hope that answers your question.
Yes.
I think the chairperson has a question.
No, I don't have a question. I just want you to have a chance to finish answering the question. And Sunday had a follow-up question, right? Or you answered it? Okay. So, Michelle, you're finished. Any other questions on that third row? How about the fourth row? Okay, we'll bring it back up then. Commissioner Geary.
Okay. I got to be honest. I had a really hard time making a decision on which way to go on the subcommittee. Because in no way, shape, or form did I think that legitimate breeders should be penalized for doing the right thing. But it seemed to be the problem was trying to differentiate the backyard breeders or pet owners that are letting their unaltered animals run loose. I don't think this is a bad idea to try to make something work. I still, if I could magically wave a wand on the, if somehow the legit breeders could register beforehand and have a different set of rules, but it just, that's why it was such a hard decision at this subcommittee level.
Commissioner, you might just interject for one second. Something to consider, aside from the fact that it's technically in contradiction with state law and how breeder is defined, what exists now, which is if you breed, you need a commercial animal facility. If you breed more than one litter per year,
true.
It's the same.
True. We just have a few more restrictions. Okay. That's my input right now.
Okay. Karen, any questions, comments?
No, I actually like to just read through it and kind of, the whole picture just to see.
Yeah.
And I can't guarantee that the final version will look identical to this, but in theory, I think this is what we would need to do in order to accomplish what the subcommittee wanted. Now, it could look a little bit different when it comes back, and I'll try to continue to do something similar to this to let you know what it's looking like. But
the whole heart of the matter is trying to get animals spayed and neutered and lessen the amount of animals in the shelter and euthanasia. That's the whole goal, I think.
We want to end.
Yeah.
And the suffering and the struggling of the animals in the community is what we want.
Well, and I personally have the exact scenario you're speaking of right next door to me. What I want to know is how enforceable is it going to be and what can we do to enforce it? Because the situation I have is the people who own these pets, I mean, like, it's the whole situation is a whole longing, but with the pets themselves, I mean, these people, to a degree, they're on disability, things like that, and they are I don't know how to put it, but they're basically, they've been above the law this time, not not in regards to just the pets, but in general. And because of them being on disability, them being on Social Security, things like that, they're like, oh, we can't do anything with them. And that's the sheriff's, not even, like I said, the animals per se. But what's to make it where we can actually enforce it and make it where they can do something?
Yeah, that's a good question, Commissioner Taggart. So, well, first, and I'll touch on the way that the commercial animal facility permit exists now, it's virtually unenforceable. And I say that because it's, well, first of all, the one thing that this would not change is that it's going to be complaint-driven. It would be nice if we can create a law or an ordinance that everybody just automatically follows. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
Bad people don't need laws, or good people don't need laws. So when we respond is the time that would be enforced.
Okay.
Right now, when I'm called to a property and there's three females on property and there's a litter of puppies, I have no way of knowing how many litters this dog had.
Right.
Unless I had been there prior and the same female had litters and I documented them 10 months ago.
Right.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
It's impossible, but it's complicated. Now, if you're talking about, let me rewind a bit. When I was an officer, the good old days, we issued criminal citations. Right now we issue administrative citations. The difference is just what it sounds. A criminal citation means you got to go to court to deal with it.
Right.
Administrative citation means it's handled by the department at the department level. It's a financial hit instead of potentially criminal. What we would do when we came to your property and you did not have a license for your pet, or could not produce a license for your pet, we cited you for failure to provide proof of licensure. And it's a fixie ticket.
Right.
You would have a certain amount of time that you'd have to go down to traffic court and provide proof of correction. There was no ifs, ands, or buts of whether or not the dog was licensed.
Right.
We knew it was not licensed. In my mind, this is an extension of that. If you ask if it's enforceable in this way, absolutely. Because when I go to your property and you have a dog, granted there's times when an animal control officer can't determine whether or not it's animal spayed or neutered, especially if it's a female, but proof of correction is a certificate of sterilization. So if there's no gray area, I don't need a registry to determine whether or not you're in compliance. I know if your animal is spayed or neutered or licensed. And if it is not, then a citation would incur or would happen, and you correct the citation.
Okay.
Like you would licensing citation.
Yeah, because my concern, like we have right now, there's literally, it's a pack of about 8 dogs. I have gone rounds. They're in my yard every day. They're in my neighbor's yard every day. They literally attack the neighbor down the street's dog and cost them $500 to the vet. And these dogs are out like every day, and not one of them are spayed or neutered. You can tell, I don't know that they all are from the exact same litter, but they are all definitely related because they look almost identical. But it's just frustrating, and it's you know, again, I don't call you guys because, you know, I know we're 2 hours over there, and I know you guys are limited on people and that. So we've been, you know, kind of trying to, I don't know if you call it take care of the problem ourselves, but, you know.
You take care of the problem yourself.
Yeah, to a point, yes. But again, it's like it takes care of the problem for the next 2 hours, and then after that, we're right back in the same boat. But, yeah, I just want to know, like, people like that, if there's something we can do with that, because. Again, and the property itself is, I can't even believe there's humans living there. It's beyond disgusting. They're living in like motorhomes that are destroyed in the back. And like I said, this one woman that's in the back has probably 7 or 8 dogs, and they are out every day, like several times a day.
Got a 22?
What's that?
Got a 22?
Yeah, we would
BB gun.
We would advise against that.
BB gun, yeah.
However, what you're explaining happens all across.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And to be completely honest, there's no perfect solution for any problems we face.
Right, right. I'm just hoping that that'll help.
Even if we were to walk onto that property, and I will tell you, I have a very, like I said, very recent experience. I was in the field just recently, and it's hard enough trying to determine there's 6 dogs running loose on the street, which dog belongs to who.
let alone trying to get somebody to say, yes, those six dogs that are running loose are mine.
Right.
So that's most often the case. So no matter, even if we were able to develop an ordinance that had teeth that can enforce somebody that's contributing to the problem to do something.
Right.
Spay neuter your pet, license your pet. It's not going to make them necessarily a responsible pet owner.
Right.
But what it can do is give somebody with a badge in my department the ability to say, you need to take action.
And that's what I was hoping for, is that at least, you know, that they could, you know, address that. Because like I said, I've addressed it with them several times, but it doesn't...
And I will tell you, Commissioner Tiger, like what I said to Danny, every maneuver you take has consequences, unintended, intended.
Right.
And the problem, one of the problems that this causes, has the potential to cause downstream, there's not enough resources to... Look, this isn't a poor county. It's a poor community that doesn't have the veterinary bandwidth to support somebody fixing their pet.
Right. Yeah.
Even if they have to. So you run across situations like that where somebody's got 11 dogs or whatever, and none of them are fixed.
Right.
Even if I have an ordinance, the resources have to be there to allow them to comply, or they're going to do something bad with those animals, or they're going to end up in the shelter in thousands and thousands of animals, like what happened in Los Angeles back in 2008. And then the shelter is overrun, and they're killing dogs by the tens and 20,000. So I've said this before to several people in this room, that if you think the problem is bad, Try to figure it out, how to solve it.
And that's the thing I feel for you guys, and I understand, you know, where you come from, absolutely, wholeheartedly. But yeah, I was just, like I said, hoping that maybe this will actually help.
We're gonna try something.
Absolutely, you got something.
Yeah, I was gonna kind of just.
Oh, you have another question? Okay.
Back up on that too, as far as like, you know, what we go out and what we're notified about, and the messages that we get from people pleading for help, saying, my situation, my neighbor's doing this is happening. We helped a woman whose dog was shredded in the front yard, and the doctors at VCA were like, I don't know if we can put him back together. I mean, I had to put a dog down because he had flesh wounds so bad because these neighbor's dogs got out and ripped him up. I mean, thankfully, they were able to do it, took two surgeries and quite a bit of money, but, you know, I think that, you know, instead of tiptoeing around it, well, what about this? We need to have those things in writing. So we, the ones that we do get, because I really think that there's a lot of people, of course, in the education or whatever, but people to go and say, listen, you can't be breeding these dogs like this. And then if I do call animal control, they should have a little bit more fear in them, because that's just more problems on their plate.
Absolutely.
And if they don't have that stuff in writing, then...
And I think that's part of the issue, like I said, with these particular people anyways, they've been... for so long above every law. I mean, you know, again, it's not even just the animals themselves, it's the, you know, drug traffic, it's all the rest of it and everything. And it's like, it's frustrating because they see it as there's no consequence for them for anything. And that's where it's like, it's frustrating because, again, like I said, my neighbor informed me yesterday that his dog was attacked. He had to spend $500 to get his dog, you know, medical care because it would probably die otherwise. And it's, like I said, an ongoing issue with these same people.
Just to go a step further on that subject, Commissioner Taggart, even the leash law in Kern County, it's not unenforceable, but it's difficult to enforce. It's only because a lot of the times, if you call animal control because your neighbor's dogs are running loose,
right,
by the time I make it out there, they're secured back on property, and I can't enforce the leash law unless I saw it.
Right.
You can see it, and you can take video of it, and I've been in court before on a third-party citation that it kicked out because somebody said that's not my dog on the video, and I couldn't prove that it was.
Oh.
Even though it was the only Neapolitan Mastiff like on the whole east side of Bakersfield. But that's difficult to enforce. Something like this is not difficult to enforce because it's either altered or it is not.
Yeah, that's
just true. Like your pet is either licensed or it is not.
Right.
So it's not an immediate solution to your problem next door.
Right, yeah. I don't think much is at this point. But
any comments from the audience? Well, we can see that it's a huge dilemma. You know, it really is. You don't want to penalize a law-abiding citizen, but you want to make sure that animals that are abused, you don't want them to be abused and terrorized in the neighborhood, like what's happening in her neighborhood. So I'm not sure how to leave this topic.
I'll do a nice feel on it.
Okay.
Leaving the chair.
Well, no, there's still much more work that needs to be done.
We're going to come back next month and we'll talk about it some more.
Yeah, and I wish I could tell you that there will come a time, hopefully sooner rather than later, when I'll have an official revision. And it'll include all of the things that the subcommittee wanted to accomplish. Now, a lot of it will be almost verbatim of what I sent the committee members, except for the parts that we couldn't because they were in contradiction with the state's definition. Most of the other stuff is pretty easy. The tethering to be in step with the state law, potable water, the rooster ordinances, like a lot of those are pretty cut and dry, and it's more of a matter of figuring out what number, letter, or extension to give it, or something like that. That shouldn't take long, but I think this is going to take a bit of time, and it should. So I will, council and I will work as often as we can, and you know, I'll keep everybody updated. I'm hopeful that I could have something completed version for you all to decide what to do with it.
Okay, fair enough. We appreciate your work very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for all the great questions in the audience, too. Under new business, guess what? There is none. And at this point, I need a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we're adjourned.
Very good.
Thank you.